All right, we're back. What's up, Paul?
What's up, Dong?
We're here with Paul Chang, who we met doing a bunch of work with Nike a year or two ago. And just rad dude, basically. I mean, besides being an incredible person to work with, I think just a person that we'd kind of go along really well with and just seemed like just a good guy. So we wanted to bring him in, obviously, and just hear what he's doing now because he actually started his own thing. Very thanks. Recently.
Yes.
Anyway, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me. Super cool idea. Obviously, I think I was telling people about this whole concept of office hours and what you guys are trying to do to just like have a little bit more information for people, like what is out there, or what people have a real conversation about, like work and all the non-special pretty things that people have to do to get work done. It's cool.
Cool. And also for anybody that's been enjoying the last 3 hours of incredible music, that's all thanks to Paul.
Thanks.
A, like, impeccably timed.
That was weird. Yeah, I
was like perfectly timed.
I remember putting like all like my, I have like 50 probably million playlists. And plus I've been using Sonos, so like all my playlists are all over the place.
Amazing.
But man, I'm glad I figured out something. Oh, and it's all over the place. So
no, so yeah, though. So we posted the list up on our Instagram if you want to see what you actually listen to, but follow that later. And then Paul's friend Diana is actually also with us. She may jump in with some interim questions.
Hello.
Yeah, Diana.
Surprise guest for Paul.
I like that. It's great.
And you're here from LA actually. But like native New Yorker, but like visiting back from LA.
I'm in LA now.
Cool. Put the tab all the way up to the other ones. Yeah, there you go.
Hi.
All right. So, what I try to usually do is just kind of work backwards, and hopefully we'll get to when you were a kid and talk
yes.
about that. But what are you doing now after you left Nike?
So I just started a small like branding and consulting company. I think the idea was just trying to work with different people, industries, and like opportunities that are maybe outside my own like comfort zone, and trying to do things in a way that I feel that I can kind of help contribute to people and what they want to do. So a lot of the stuff now that I'm doing, it's like I don't think I have like an envision of wanting to have like a big office or company with like 10, 20, 30 people. I think the idea was always to try to keep it super small, and I have been working with a couple of like friends now, and that's the, I think the overall idea was always just be able to work with friends on projects. So some of the brands and companies I'm working with now are like more like hospitality or food. So doing some work with Soho House on some stuff for Art Basel, and then some of their openings for their locations next year. Amazing. Which will be cool. Some of that work is like, you know, overall like you know, opportunities, brand stuff, and how they can do things maybe a little bit differently. So there's some really, really good people there that I think we're just trying a couple of different ideas around, like, how to talk about what they do, where they do it, and, like, who they do stuff with. So we're working on some programs for Art Basel in, like, workshops and events and stuff like that. So it's cool. More to, obviously, be publicized, I think, in, like, the next couple of weeks.
Do you think that kind of interest in keeping it small kind of focus, is that a reaction from coming from a very large company?
I think it's just like my personal point of view of like where I think companies are going to go, because I feel like when you think about like advertising agencies or marketing companies, you know, from the past, they're definitely in a lot of very, very successful ones that have, you know, hundreds of employees, you know, which do everything a company wants from top to bottom. I don't really find myself to be an expert at anything. You know, I think like I have an understanding of how things work, but I know really, really good people that are professionals and like experts in what they do. So like for you, and like obviously like, you know, getting a chance to work with you on some projects, I would never find myself to want to ever have, or would I ever say I had the capability of designing or building a space well. I think I know, generally speaking, like who to contact when there is a very specific thing in mind. And that to me, I feel like, is a skill set, you know? So whether somebody wants a store, or the way they want like a pop-up experience, or they want to create like a workshop or whatever it is, I think the one thing that I have experience in is just working with a really good group of professionals that can do that well. And so for me, like, I think the reality is just that coming from a place that, you know, we is a massive company, and working with, you know, most of my entire life was like working with big companies, I'm very much happy to be working in a much smaller capacity with just people that I like to work with. So that's a lot easier for me.
Is this the first time you've struck out on something on your own?
No. I had a production company with a couple of friends of mine that we started in L.A. It was called What Matters Most. And it was like, I want to say, yeah, it was almost like 10 years ago we first started it. Huh. And that was like more of like a, it was around film and production and like music videos and video production. So, you know, it was like a similar situation where like I had some really close friends that I wanted to work with. We had an idea that we would be able to create like films and videos for people that we liked. And that, you know, at that time too was, you know, we were just learning. Like, you know, I wasn't an expert in film or anything at that point. I had no experience in doing anything along those lines. But, you know, what I did know is like people, and I, you know, I have worked in and around music for a long time, that I had, you know, people I knew that wanted to make videos, and, you know, and we had, you know, my other partners, you know, my friend Omid, who's like a really, really close friend of mine. It's like a writer.
This is a partner now or partner from
previously. Yeah. He's an amazing individual with super like good taste and like a really good knowledge of like, you know, film and music, as well as my friend Danny Song at the time, also was like an editor. So we kind of had like a different group of people that wanted to do something. Mm-hmm. I mean, that company was founded in a way to just allow us to make stuff. We never made any money. I think I've definitely lost a lot of money in that time. Every single budget that we ever got from anybody, we spent on the project, which was cool. Yeah. And we got to work with different directors and build some cool work. You know, we've done some pretty good work, you know, with a lot of different musicians and some brands, mm-hmm. which was dope. And, like, you know, we got to put out films and videos that we felt very proud about, you know. And you know, at that time, like, it was interesting too, because it was just kind of like at the turn of like when people were shooting a lot of stuff with like smaller digital like cameras and stuff, you know. Like, I remember, like, at that point, it's not like the time now where like a lot of people are shooting stuff even on like their phones, which is like kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, and actually like releasing videos on their phones. But at that time, it wasn't like a big deal to, it was a big deal to like have, like, you'd have to invest so much money, mm-hmm. to make a video,
just to get,
you know, like to the idea of like actually having a $3,000 music video was crazy when you'd have to like rent cameras and equipment and have staff and like producers, directors, cameramen, editor, like all that stuff. It's like, it's such an investment. Uh-huh. We did it because, like, we had friends that worked for companies and, like, were shooting commercial gigs that wanted to just have an outlet to do their own shit. And, like, mm-hmm. the thing for me was, like, okay, we just want to create work. So, like, you know, we were doing stuff with, like, different labels. An old friend of mine, Jamie Strong, who used to have, was just at that time starting a new kind of venture with a record label. You know, we knew and got a chance to kind of work with and try to do different things. We were working on stuff with like Flying Lotus and like Warp. We did some stuff with like Kendrick Lamar when he was just doing things with like...
That was like 10 years ago?
Eight years ago.
Was that pre-Innovative Leisure or was that Innovative Leisure?
That was like around... Innovative Leisure was
the
like...
Jamie Strong stuff.
Yeah, that was 2009, I want to say. Like, that's when like he first was starting that stuff, like post Stone's Throw. Like, so that stuff was like all like early work where we got to do stuff and try to do stuff with different people. Like, I don't know, it was like every, I remember like very best. We were like doing music videos, like the very best, like, which was like so old and like long ago. Shafiq from like Sara, we were doing stuff with like, I remember we had like a short video with Vans. We were doing things. And so like all the stuff at the time was just, like I said, very much figuring it out on the go. You just, it's the same thing. Like, you know, you might have, and like a person who works in like the film industry that has been renting tens of thousands of dollars of equipment from a production house.
Yeah.
So then therefore they may be able to get a break on renting something for this smaller job, and they just want to do it. Cause like for most people too, it's just like producing a body of work that they can stand behind that's their own, you know? And that for me, like, again, I was very young. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Definitely didn't know how to like run a business. Definitely didn't know anything about anything really in this world of like film and music production. And I had some friends that I trusted and I liked to work with that we like, you know, just were kind of building the blocks of a business, you know?
How long did you guys run?
We did that for, I was probably part of there for, I did it for maybe like four or five years.
The company, so it was for a little while.
The company went for like, yeah, maybe like eight, you know? Okay. And like when I got, like I started working at Nike, it's just too much.
Did you go there from there straight to into Nike?
No, I've had all kinds of like weird jobs. Like, you know,
we'll get to all of them.
I've had some very weird jobs. That was at the time, I think I was working at Microsoft, and I was doing some stuff around music, which was just kind of like a, like I said, like this agency or company was just founded as a way for me to like have an outlet for us to do something that we liked to do, you know? Whereas like, you know, and that's like kind of think where I've learned a lot too, is just the ability to do something on the side. I think when I was younger and I had a lot more time freedom before like having a kid or having like a wife and like a serious relationship that I'd had to dedicate time to after work or whatever, like I would say it was like my full-time job. I would do all this stuff with like for like what matters most, where like my partners were very much vested from like the jump and like we're doing stuff and like had more time to dedicate to it. And that's the pain points of everything that we learned from that company. I think I'm understanding now like how to do things on my own, because a lot of that stuff was like stuff I didn't understand, like I really just didn't know, like, you know. And you just you don't know, like things that you don't know start to become very much real when you have to actually pay for things, you know, and like actually put together budgets, and like you run over budget, and like if you're, you know, realizing as your own business, like you actually have to sustain, you know, and that's, it's not like an art project, like that you actually have to like, you know, make shit and then make profit out of it. Was like, I couldn't really understand how to do that at that time. I was just too naive.
And I have so many questions for that period between what Matt is most in now, but
yeah,
well, let's go chronologically. I guess. What was the, actually let's go backwards still. How long were you at Nike?
I was at Nike 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
And you just started your own thing how long ago?
2 months ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
How's that feel?
Crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's exciting, stressful. It's all the emotions I'm sure like everyone feels when they try to do something different or new. I love it. The freedom, I think, is really, really nice. The ability to take, you know, like you asked like what I did today. I had like two different meetings that were very much in like two different realms of opportunity of where things could go. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, I don't know, right? I think that my thing is, like, now it's, like, I'm talking to somebody else earlier today, like, obviously as, like, you know, starting your own thing, it's more about, I think, I realize that people will never be able to tell you generally what sometimes you want, especially in, like, my field, which is, like, marketing or, in which case, like, creation of stuff. I don't know, like, I don't have, like, a hard skill set, right? So it's, like, oh, I'm a designer. Cool. We need a logo. Right. All right. There you go. Like, here's a logo. Or it's like, I am like an architect. Yeah. We want a house. Cool. Here's a house. Yeah. It's like marketing is like nebulous. Yeah. Like, so when everyone asks me like, what do you do? It's just like, well, I kind of just like put together opportunities based upon like what people need, you know? And that's the thing now is like what I have to figure out. And like a lot of the times it's like I have a conversation with somebody. They would tell me like what they're working on. I tell them like what I feel like is an opportunity for them to do something better, and then try to figure out like what that opportunity looks like if I'm involved, if I'm not involved, if I can help them.
Mm. Is it similar? Obviously, you had a, with Nike, you obviously had a kind of like point of reference in terms of everything was sort of for Nike, but is the kind of work you're doing or the way you're looking at working with collaborators and in your case now with clients, mm-hmm. is it similar to how you were thinking about stuff at Nike?
Very similar. Okay. In that, like, I think you are always trying to create a solution based on a series of needs. Mm. You never know what the hell the thing is, right? So, like, I think the Nike stuff was, like, exciting in a lot of ways for me because I was able to work with so many interesting people. But at the same time, when you're launching a product, you don't really know what you're going to do. There's not a formula for that. Right. You know, at least the stuff that, you know, I was fortunate enough to work on, like, there was never, like, here's the idea. Right. It's always like you know, same way that you kind of like, or like figuring out, it's like you have a conversation with somebody, you want them to see like what they're looking to do, what they want to do, and you paint a picture for how that thing can come to life.
Yeah.
You know, same thing for me now is just like, I just talk to different companies, you know, or brands or people or whatever. And I think it's exciting for me because it's allowing me to like work in a space that's different and new and something totally, I would say like, similar but dissimilar from what I was doing, but similar, right? Like in the same way, I had to think the same way, but like the opportunities of projects, hospitality, food, restaurants, whatever it is, like these are the things that I never really got to work in, you know? So like my entire life I've just worked in something that like so many different jobs that revolved around all of my interests, and whether I knew what to do or not, I just tried to figure out an opportunity for me to be involved more or less.
I mean, because it is, we worked with you on a number of projects when you were at Nike, and like you said, your role was, for us anyway, it was kind of like point person, but the day-to-day stuff was, even for us, like, was nebulous. And like you said, it's like, actually, that's kind of the job is to actually try to find something definitive from a kind of nebulous world.
Mm-hmm.
So just dumb thing, like, what was your title when you were there?
So I was a senior director for influencer marketing.
Okay, and like, so you oversaw a number of different, like, divisions, right?
Yeah, so that was like overseeing, like, product collaborations and designers, all the stuff that's like not generally like life, it's all like lifestyle stuff. And then entertainment, so that's like music and film stuff, you know, so people that we'd had like agreements with on any type of product or any type of deal. And then like boutique retail in the easiest sense, you know.
Like, I know you were involved with a lot of like Nike sportswear stuff, right?
Yeah, sportswear is probably like a pretty big category that I was doing stuff with. And it was, like I said, like, you know, like high school me, I don't think I would ever be able to like tell you that would be like something I could actually do. You know, it's crazy because I grew up like, you know, loving sneakers and stuff. You know, I think current me is just like, you know, I'm super like very, very thankful to like have an opportunity to work on like so many cool projects that like stuff that I care like, you know, like about, you know, and like stuff that I actually like, you know. But I am also very much excited about like working on things that I don't have like any real understanding of how things work, you know. So like that's why, like I say, like hospitality, food or stuff like that, like I always wanted to do something there, and I feel like if I'm not using my skill set and like experience now to like do that, I think like that's like almost like a disservice.
I mean,
myself.
It does seem like the role you were in and your skill set, like you're saying, is exactly transferable to basically any interest you have, you know, whether it's like you said, food, hospitality, sneakers. And it's, again, it's sort of like figuring out what that problem is, finding a solve for it and finding out who to bring in to do it. It's almost irregardless of the industry in a lot of ways. Which is amazing. Like, it's rad that...
It's cool. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, it's definitely been interesting to, like, just see, like, what people are in need of. But like I said, it is, like, it's very, I would say, like, challenging at times to, you know, like, when you have, like, a hard skill set, like I said, like, if you're a designer or you're, you know, like, you know, engineer, or if you're, like, a developer, or if you're, like, whatever, like... It's pretty clear, generally speaking, when you ask for what someone does and then like, oh, I need that.
And like what that deliverable is going to be.
My thing is very like much like what? Like, you know, and even if I'm asking like, you know, most people don't understand. It's like, oh, you do brand strategy. It's like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know what I'm saying? But then you're like kind of like understanding that like, you know, I think, you know, I talked to a lot of different companies in different stages of like their business. So it's like, okay, you may have like a very small company that's like a record label. Oh, cool. Like, you know, you put out music and you do shows and then like sometimes you do merchandise. Well, sometimes like, you know, you realize that you can just keep doing those things, but then you definitely realize like either what potential you have to like do something bigger or get different partners on board or actually have this to actually mean something more than just that. But that's any company, right? And I think sometimes like, you know, like it may be like some people would see like having like a brand strategy person or whatever, like that's a luxury. Doesn't really seem like something that you need to turn a dollar, right? So like I think, you know, some companies have like the luxury of a resource, whether that's time or money, to like hire people, like, you know, to do that. So that's why I think it's like it's interesting. But I think like most people, like, you know, at any stage of like growth, whether you're a new company or small mid-tier company or even large company, you always have to ask yourself those questions, you know, like, oh, like what is like my whole purpose of doing this? Like, why am I doing this? How do I do it? And then also too, is just like pulling in people that you feel like have like experience doing things and pushing things to like a new space.
Can we walk through like one of the products? I'd love it if it was one of the products that we worked on together, so I also understand it, but just kind of like the steps and with that product specifically, like let's say it's either that we did the Travis Scott with the VaporMax stuff, the Tom Sachs, which I know having Tom involved might have been a totally different beast as well. A few other Air Max things. I don't know if the Travis is the best one, but is there, I'd love to just kind of walk through, like, what were the practical steps in terms of, like, what was the first ask? What was the thing that was being launched? What was the problem here? What was the thing to solve? So it's like, all right, here's one example of what you did as that role.
Yeah, I would say, like, maybe like the Tom stuff is probably a little bit easier to understand. Sure. Like, and, like, you know, it's probably like, it was one of those situations where, like, cool, we're launching a product. With somebody that's super...
This is the second Tom Sachs shoe, or like second iteration of that.
So, you know, it's always like something that has... it's cool because it's like a really cool product with somebody that is super interesting and creative. And you want to just be able to figure out how to tell the narrative of what the product is in an interesting way.
When you say launching a product, is there like certain metrics that, let's say Nike was like, look, we're going to launch this thing. We need to hit XYZ. Or they're just like, let's just find a rad thing to get this out in the world. And it's pretty open-ended.
There's always like some sort of parameters of goals, right? You know, and I think like without getting too in the weeds of like what
I like the weeds. The weeds are good right now.
Everything happens in the weeds.
The weeds that you can talk about anyway.
Well, I would say there are always like stuff that, you know, like that would define like a successful project. It varies on each one. I think, you know, the opportunity for just doing something different is always like appreciated, and doing something in an interesting way. The main thing I think like with that project in particular was just trying to find a way the story would come to life in a cool way, you know? So that's going to take insights from talking to Tom and the team. That's going to take insights into understanding like what Nike wants. And then also like for it's trying to identify like a clear ask. The only thing, like I always say, like working with anybody, you just have to be very, very, try to get very, very specific on like what it is you are asking people to do, right? Because no one likes to be invited to a conversation or a meeting or anything and like not really understand what are you asking me to do? Like, you know, you can talk about like the project or like the process or whatever, but like I think whenever you introduce somebody else to like the project, whatever, right? You should just be very, very definitive on like those things that people should be doing, right? So like when we're asking like, you know, like that specific example for you, it's like, okay, well, here's the reality. You guys are extremely talented creators of spaces, you know, and have like a very, very rich understanding of how to build a space. You are working with a person that is an artist that like has a very, very specific vision of what he'd like to create. He may have an understanding of how to build it, but he also doesn't maybe have the time, bandwidth, the resources to actually even consider all of the ebbs and flows of how that thing actually comes to life, mm-hmm. right? Which is essentially what we are trying to solve, like, mm-hmm. you know, obviously my team. And it's like, at that time too, it's like, okay, it's almost like trying to break it down. Like, what is it we're trying to build or actually do? How are we going to do that? And then just figuring out like kind of like the clear roles, responsibilities of like what people should be doing. Mm-hmm. It is just like orchestrating that stuff. You know, it's like I'd say it's always like orchestrated chaos. It's just like most of the time it's very frantic, hectic, stressful timelines, budgets are all like very much like, you know, it's like chaotic, like literally chaotic.
And these kind of projects, especially for architectural projects, these are really fast. Mm. Like even for, I mean, you know, we're used to coming from projects where it's like you've got a couple of years to work on these things, and these are like 3 months, 2 months sometimes. And obviously there's different teams that work at different speeds like that. But mm-hmm. that's one of the more exciting things that we found anyway, working on things like that with you was, oh, it's a totally different way to look at getting something built. I mean, I think the Tom thing was up for 2 weekends, basically like 2 weeks maybe. And mm-hmm. obviously the lifespan of these things are also very different than other projects, but that was kind of exciting about it. But just really quickly, I wanted to sort of describe what the project was, because for people that didn't see it. So again, it was Tom Sachs launching his second iteration of the Nike shoe. And basically what we supported on was more or less it was an obstacle course out on Governor's Island in a warehouse out there. And the intent, I guess, was basically not only would people have to come to Governor's Island to, this is the first time you could purchase the shoe, right? Or order the shoe or place your name down for the shoe. Obviously, people knew about the shoe coming out, I'm sure, and were like, there was a lot of demand for it, but this was maybe certainly the first time you could see it in any capacity. And what I really liked about it was you literally had to go through an obstacle course in order to even get it. we have competing radio going on. which was hilarious because, like, in my mind, a lot of people purchasing this shoe... Well, I remember one of the original ideas, and I don't remember if this came from Tom or Nike or someone, was like, you have to wear the shoe you just bought to go through this obstacle course. And that cracked me the fuck up, because I'm sure most of these people are like, I do not want to touch this thing. Mm-hmm. And now it's like 10 times more valuable than when people paid for it. But there's this idea that put your shoe to the test. You're going to buy this thing. Use the goddamn shoe. So that was the kind of brief that was given to us, was mm-hmm. it some sort of Tom Sachsian obstacle course. There's going to be some push-ups. There's going to be probably climb over a log or something. And then here's a warehouse space, and then we ran from there in terms mm-hmm. of working with you guys to lay it out. But to even get to the point of we're going to do an obstacle course, or we're going to be in Governor's Island, or like, right, we were given a lot of pretty clear brief points. Mm-hmm. How long did you guys work with Tom, or even internally, to even get to that point where like, okay, this is a rough idea of what we want to do as a launch?
I mean, it took like, definitely like some time, I'd say a few months. It's, I don't know. It's like I said, like most of those projects are like, it's just, like I said, it's mostly about trying to figure out at its core, like the what, the how, then generally the when, right? And then obviously with who, and then what are they actually doing? It's so hard sometimes to even get to that point. Actually, maybe that's it. it's so hard sometimes to get to the point of that level of clarity, which I think of like a lot of my like experience with like numerous projects. I just realized, like, you know, when, you know, like you're trying to like move something forward, you're just really ultimately wanting to push to get that level of clarity mm-hmm. from everybody that you're working with on, like, this is what I want you to do. This is when I want you to do it. And can you do it like by this time or money or whatever, right? And then like you just track against that. Sometimes it's like only like 2 people, sometimes it's 20 people, 20 different companies, whatever. Like that one I think was pretty clear in terms of there wasn't that many variables. Like, I mean, there's a lot of like what ifs, but at the end of the day, like we were trying to get to a pretty clear place of this is like the location, this is the duration, this is a general concept. Mm-hmm. Can't you help?
Let's make it work.
Yeah, try.
yeah. So that when you, so like you said, you were kind of looking, you were obviously on a kind of marketing and relationship with collaborator side when you were at Nike. Before you went to Nike, or what did you do, I guess, between What Matters Most?
Yeah,
and
that stuff.
Landing at Nike.
My path to all of this stuff was just so weird. Like, I know, like, you know, like, at that time, like, I, when I had started the company, I think it was like 2008, I was doing some work with Microsoft and like music and like had like a variety of different friends that I was working with at the time on just trying to figure out like what Microsoft is like a mega corporation trying to figure out its place in music was going to look like.
Oh, interesting.
But when I started doing the film and TV or film and music stuff, it was just like, oh, I want to do stuff around TV. Like, is there opportunities to like understand like what TV stuff was going to be like? And this was kind of like around the time of like Netflix kind of like.
This was after
like the What Matters Most like kind of launched. Mm. I'd worked at Showtime for like 2 years. Mm. Early, I think 2010, that's when I first moved to New York. And I was there for a couple of years just like working on television. And again, knew nothing about television. Mm. Knew nothing about like how like networks work. Knew nothing about like anything like how like, you know, scripts are sold in, like basically TV shows are produced, how they're marketed, how they're launched, and then how like people are like consuming that. So like at that time was, like I said, it was just like, I remember I was working there and like Netflix had just bought House of Cards. Mm-hmm. And that was like this first like big thing. Cause in that, which I found out too, in the industry, a lot of people had passed on like that.
Really?
Yeah. It was too expensive. Like the parameters of paying Kevin Spacey and like everybody else is just like, which I was a big like learning for me too. Yeah. It's just like what it costs to actually put together like a television series and sell it. It's just like one, it's like a huge endeavor. Huh. Again, I think a lot of those costs have gone down, right? And a lot of the platforms people weren't, but at the time it was just like that's how people watch TV. Like they were watching it still through cable. You weren't like watching most of the shit on your iPad, right? Or like through only having Netflix and cutting cable. You weren't like doing all those things. So now it's just like totally different now with like people buying or streaming stuff direct from like whoever they want to watch stuff from. So like that shit was all new to me. But again, like I said, like I was there for like 2 years.
And what was your, it was the show, role there?
Marketing for like television content and mm-hmm. series. So it's like trying to figure out ways for like people to watch television across like different applications, like second screen apps, being able to like figure out like ways to like bring people to watch television shows together. And then for me, really, it was just like, and which I'm actually more excited to do again, is just like get back into like film and TV, because I feel like now it's just like a very, very rich opportunity to do stuff. And like I find myself watching a lot more TV than I probably did before. Now that, you know, like
it's also like way better than a lot.
Way better. But also too, like I feel like, you know, if you're talking about like opportunities for like people who like, you know, like especially like Asian people, mm-hmm. You know, and I recently, like my friend Phil invited me to go see that film Burning by Lee Chang-dong.
Oh, I don't know.
With Steven Yeun, which is an amazing film. Just really, I think, helped me understand a lot more about like what it's like to see and just, like basically like more Asian people on screen. Yeah. I mean, Crazy Rich Asians is like its own like
kind
of rally.
That?
Yeah. But it's,
right,
it's
who I was talking to yesterday. Who did I talk to yesterday? Oh, sorry, it's John Wang and who's Chinese, and I was like, did you see it? And it was like, I could feel the shame of like, I haven't seen it yet. I need to go see it. And I had that same thing before when it was out for a while and getting all of this, like everybody was like, you need to see it.
What's cool, what I would say like this, like, you know, in a sense, like I'm so happy that like, obviously like that exists for people to like see like what it's like for, you know, like people like that you identify with on that level. Because I think for a long time, this will actually go into some real like shit. Like I think like when you're a kid and like obviously like what I love about like what you are trying to do is especially like, you know, being someone who's, you know, Asian that has grown up in a lot of different like surroundings and environments that like you may not have seen or known more in people like that are like in roles that you like, you know, do. For me, like all the things I'm seeing now is just getting me more interested in like that is like, it's cool to see that. And it's really, really like, so like Burning, for instance, like was like so rad. It's like, aside from like the film being a great film, a lot of the little nuances of, you know, that being a Korean director, that being Korean film, and me growing up as a Korean kid in like San Francisco, some of the very, very simple things of the settings of like being in like your parents' house and like you're digging through the fridge and making food and you're making like very, very basic Korean soups, mm-hmm. stuff like that, and how you eat them mm-hmm. and like little things like when the phone goes off and like all like that kind of stuff like was just like very, very much, I think, talked to me on like a very different level mm-hmm. than I'm used to. Because I don't identify with, you know, what I majority of things I see on television because that's not how I grew up.
Yeah.
So personally, to be able to see that and being projected in just those little moments are like very, very cool to me because it's like I have a very different understanding of what's going on there than somebody else.
Right.
And that's what the director is obviously like trying to invoke. While also making sure that this is not just a film that's so narrow in scope that it doesn't appeal to like a broader audience, mm. right? So like the film is interesting because it's like kind of like the trailers kind of make it seem like a thriller, but it's really in essence just a very, very interesting portrayal of like stereotypes.
Where was it shot primarily?
It was shot in Korea. Okay. Yeah, so Seoul and...
Is it in Korean?
It's in Korean, but subtitled. So it's pretty dope in the fact that, like, on a holistic level, like, if you're just, like, somebody that appreciates film and good movies, and you're not Asian, not Korean, you can... there's a pretty interesting dynamic between the protagonists, of which there are three, two males and one female, like, what happened, mm-hmm. right? Just, like, what actually happened, right? As, like, a question mark and... Did things happen or was it this or how much of this was mental? How much of this actual, whatever it is, right? For me, what was like crazy is like what I took from it, which may or may not be true, is just like its portrayal of two Korean men and like the drastic differences in terms of what they represented and how that could play into how people look at those men, you know? One being like kind of more like a chauvinist playboy. Mm. The other being more somebody that's like kind of like stuck in friend zone and like mm. not really being able to express his emotions, like, you know, which is to me is just like, oh, I can identify right. that to an extent because, you know, those are conversations I have yeah. like a lot, you know what I'm saying? Like growing up and with people and then all of that stuff, it's like, it's cool, you know?
Did you, I mean, one of the things that is funny because like I didn't really identify with anybody really in Crazy Rich Asians. Except on a totally superficial level that they were Asian. Like, I realized it's like, weirdly, it was had such an effect on me, even though it wasn't like, oh, that insanely rich dude, I know what that feels like. Like, it wasn't any real identification, except I'm listening to you talk, I realized it was such a big deal because not only were they Asian, but it was in, like, you watched it in an American, you watched it in the U.S., mm-hmm. that it actually had a commercial impact, it had... Yeah. The audience was not all Asian that was watching the theater we were in.
Yes.
And there was something about just like seeing that representation of literally someone that I had zero to do with the Correct. Exception that yeah. we were both Asian.
Same. And I think that's the other thing. Like this is awesome to see that. And it's also eye opening. And it's also just makes me want to be more involved in playing some role yeah. of that. Not but like also, I'm not a creator. Like I'm not a director. I'm not a writer. Am I anything? If I have the opportunity to contribute in allowing more people to know about it or my experience in creating events or production or whatever,
yeah.
right, I would like to do that, you know, just because I think personally it's actually awesome
yeah.
And fulfilling. But two, it's just like it promotes something that I think is much needed, and I just feel like I have some sort of, I don't know, like, I don't know if it's like, I feel like a need personally, yeah. but I just want to do something like
well, that. Well, it's funny, is I also realized, like, because that identification, again, with Crazy Age was so superficial, it's like, oh, there's like, the fact that that still had a huge impact means that all the actual stuff that is not the kind of representation you can create or be a part of that is not superficial. Or even mildly identifying with stuff that I identify with, will have not only even a bigger impact, but there's so much room for that. Mm. Like you could do,
yeah.
you could just putting I had a Karen Wong from the New Museum was here earlier, and she was talking about one of the positions she had a little while ago was starting an office, and the David Ajay is a black man, and she was saying, and I was like, how did you guys kind of make an impact being two minorities in London in this architecture world? And she's like, we just showed up at places, like, just people saw you, and literally just putting you in front of someone, putting people like that in front of someone has such an immediate impact. It's almost like you don't really have to do a lot.
Yeah. Well,
obviously it's a lot, but it's also like everything has such an immediate impact right now because there isn't much of that representation.
Yeah.
Still.
I mean, I think here's the, I think reality. I think for like, I feel like what is out there in terms of what people put out, and there's obviously a lot more opportunity for representation. I think the only thing is like really a good positive is that people I think are more open to that, right? And then I think are at least not everybody clearly, but there is a growing awareness and interest in understanding that, you know. And I think that to me is like a good first step into making sure that now, like, what you put out is not just going to be seen as this Asian thing.
Yeah.
It's just a thing,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know. So it's like, you know, that's like awesome, you know, and it doesn't have to be classified as such, you know,
right.
It just should be like what it is. It's nice, but though, that there is people really like seeing and understanding that, like, one, I guess financially there's a market for that, which is the number one thing you realize in like film and TV quickly is like the way that people finance or greenlight things are generally speaking to compartmentalizing audiences and opportunity, right? So things like that, I think, just show people that there are enough people that are interested in stuff that sometimes aren't easily classified into those buckets that allow people. And then, like I said, this all goes back to like what's happening now in terms of distribution, production, and things getting a lot easier, and people being able to find out about things a lot quicker without having like the systems in place that typically would have to define something as being needed for success.
I have a question actually for your marketing brain side that I never really thought about before, but why, like you say, now there is a kind of market for, let's say, an Asian audience, and in a way it's like, or even Asian stuff that is not seen as Asian stuff, like that movie and things. But why now is that starting to happen, or has it been there, or now people are finally tapping into it, or has something changed, or is it just a natural?
I mean, the Crazy Rich Asians is probably the easiest example, yeah, of having a blockbuster film that is produced for like a fraction of what they've actually like made, mm-hmm, and realizing that people that are outside of just being Asian are gonna watch it. I think, but that's been happening for quite some time, mm-hmm, you know. And I think, like, whether it's like
why did that one work?
To be honest, I'm having a hard time understanding, to be honest. Like, you
it's
know,
not an incredible movie by any means.
No, but I also, but I feel that, like, again, you always talk about, like, I think commonalities around, like, what's happening in the climate now. And I think, obviously, people are hyper aware and supportive of things that sometimes mean and have bigger repercussions than they think. So for that film, it's definitely more of, like, being very vocal and supportive of that because you don't see that a lot, which I think a lot of people got behind, and then that's dope, you know. It means a lot more because it's something that you don't see a lot of. Now, how long that's going to last, not sure, but I can tell you that there are, likewise, for many minorities in America, millions of people that are willing to support that, you know. And now, again, like in this day and age where, like, it's even crazy, I was having a conversation with my friend about websites, which I find myself to be someone that's like semi like connected, but also like the fact that I don't even read that many websites anymore is kind of weird, mm-hmm, but also crazy, but like that in a way is kind of scary, but allows ease of access of information to get shared is kind of cool. And that, like, obviously, like, you know, you follow and share and like are subscribing to people that, you know, are essentially like media outlets that will tell you about certain things as music, film, whatever, and that becomes very, very easy for somebody that doesn't have a huge scale of a budget to get a message across, mm-hmm, right? So I think now, like, from the Asian stuff, speaking about Crazy Rich Asians and all that opportunity, I just feel like, yeah, like, I think more people are being aware that like they start to see those things and they feel a certain way and they want to continue that. And that's for me is like where I feel marketing wise, I'm like, yeah, like there is a real opportunity for that. But all that really comes down to is just like at this point of time, like I think more people are spending money on the shit that they care about. And like at its very essence, if you don't vote, if you don't register, you don't, you know, protest, kids, everybody is making a more conscious decision to spend their money with what they care about, you know? And like, so if your easiest way to support something is to buy a t-shirt or a drink or a ticket to an event or a show, at the very least they do that, you know, at the very least. And that's where I feel like that's a nice like direction of like kids in general, like knowing that like there's absolutely some power of your dollar, like, you know. And that's like the, that's the one positive I'll say, like, you know, of like shit that's been going on like this, like society now is like, I feel like kids at the very least are like understanding of that. And it's very clear within like fashion and like stuff, like that's what they're doing, which is cool.
And for Asian kids to see themselves reflected back on the, in the film, I mean, that must be huge even in and of itself, just for you to be able to see that.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, you know, I'm trying to think like, you know, like
did you have that when you were a kid?
I mean, when I was growing up, like, it's what? Like Margaret Cho, like, you know, yeah, that was probably like was everyone's like de facto, like, you know, she's Korean. I was like, you know, not necessarily somebody that I, you know, shared a lot of values with, but like,
but she was like that rare loud Asian,
hell yeah, which is dope, important. You know, yeah. Which is fucking awesome. And then like, you know, like I feel like, you know, like Eddie Wong, awesome fucking guy, friend of mine too, that like I really am super supportive of all the stuff that he's helped to like usher in more people to have that conversation, you know, and show people that like through his writing, through his cooking, and now like, you know, directing and like, you know, being a part of stuff, that he has obviously a point of view and something to say. And whether you agree with that or not, like what I really, really like appreciate is that there's more people trying to do that, you know. And he's, I think he's done in a lot of ways, like a lot of really awesome opportunities for people to like, yeah, it's cool, you know, and like think about things and have a different perception of that, you know, and which I like. But yeah, when I was growing up, none of that shit existed. I mean, like, you know, plus two, I grew up in San Francisco. So like, we were thankful that I had like a lot of Korean people, a lot of Chinese people, a lot of Vietnamese people. I, you know, like my sister was like, you know, like super fobby into cars and like racing cars and shit like that. Like, you know,
she had like a lowered Civic.
Sounds great.
She took my mom's Accord and like definitely like co-opted it and put like a body kit on it and painted it and like
did
all
like
that
the
shit.
Neon lights underneath.
No ground effects, but
ground
had like
effects.
But had sick rims, and then that car got somehow fucked up or stolen or some shit, and then she got like a Del Sol that she fixed up crazy. But it's funny because like she was super into that, and I was like so turned off by that because maybe I was too close to it. Yeah, she was a full on like fob, like, you know, Frisco fob, like cut school, and like hung out with those dudes, and like that was never my thing. I was like, nah. Like,
did she continue? What's she at now?
Thankfully, no, she got out of that, like whatever, mindset. It's kind of cool now. In retrospect, it's, like, kind of cool, but, like, at the time, it was, like, I was just, like, this is so corny. Like, it's not my thing. But, again, like...
I'm waiting for it to come back.
I kind of want to
grow,
really,
like, the long, like...
The bangs.
The weird bangs.
I find, there's, like, a couple, like, car websites I follow. That's one of the few websites I still read. But, like... There is like a huge demand for old Integras,
dude,
and like it's crazy weird. It's like, and Supras and all of that weird shit that I like was like in the 90s. High school was like super popular, at my school, people are paying like top dollar for it. It's really weird.
Thinking back, like that was, I don't really think about this, but that was one of the few like Asian American, like a weird version of Asian American subculture. That obviously was like a really specific pocket of a type of people. And again, like I was always like, that is, those guys are weird. And they were rad, but also like I had no idea how to even like approach them or talk to them or anything. But I can't think of many other subcultures in that Asian American world besides the classic music guy or like the nerd guy. You know, like there wasn't much
the guy,
really defined.
Yeah. I grew up in San Francisco, so there was this, basically like that culture was like there's a car stuff, which was like very much import culture, mm-hmm. right? Lower cars, you know, import like Hondas, Acuras, all that stuff. Then there was also like the dudes that sold fireworks in Chinatown, you know, like that was like definitely a thing too, you know, and like. There's dudes that sat in the corners on top of the boxes that, like, near 4th of July, you pull up on and, like, sell stuff to, like, you know. there's the dudes that, like, and these are all, like my sister's friends and, like, friends of friends of my high school. There was a dude selling E at, like, the raves. So, like, we used to do, like, SF Bay Area. Like, we used to have that place called Home Base, which was, like, a Home Depot competitor. But they had this huge sign in Oakland called Home Base, and like next to that like sign was an actual warehouse, and that's where we go like to raves. But like it's so funny, I do remember that. And then like obviously, but there's like all the dudes that used to like sell like E and all kinds of like funny shit there. I mean, I guess whatever culture. I just remember like those were
E
like
and
my
fireworks at the same time.
E fireworks and fast cars, loud fast cars. Those were like that's what I remember. But yeah, I guess like I'm trying to think about like other things that were like happening. But I guess it's funny, right? Like, cause when I was growing up, like that was like obviously like a thing. Like you'd either like be like some like sort of like Asian gang dude.
Yeah.
Or it's it like yeah, or whatever you're like with skaters, you know, yeah. And that's like, you know, which was cool, like at least SF had like that, you know. I never really skateboarded, like I tried for a bit and like really hurt myself and I was like nah, but like I had a lot of friends that like, you know, smoke weed and skateboard, like that was like a big thing.
But so you, I mean, you grew up though with surrounded by a lot of different kinds of Asians.
Oh yeah, big time.
Were they mostly Asian American, like born in the U.S. kind of Asians, or
all like yeah, first generation.
Did you at that time see anybody kind of like try to carve out something on their own or like start something up on their own in a way where like, oh damn, that dude, that man or woman is trying to do something kind of interesting, unique?
I mean, most of my friends, like, you know, like yeah, I mean, the only ones I could relate to, like in like the way that I like was like super like interested in was like DJ culture. So the other thing, which is really cool, like the Bay Area, was like there was like a mobile DJ culture that was huge. So like there were like guys that basically bring sound systems and DJ setups to parties, mostly like school dances, or and then eventually got into raves and what other clubs. Like that was like a big deal. So like the Invisible Scratch Pickles and like all the keyboard stuff. Yeah. Those were like mobile Bay Area DJ culture. Like that was like a big thing. And all of the other, like, I think like Vinrock and like a bunch of other like old, like turntablist dudes were like part also of their own like little cliques. So the ones like my one of my high school friends, his brother was a DJ, and like, which was really dope, was like he was DJing in like his bedroom, and he would DJ at parties and all of that shit. And that's like the one thing that I knew, like a lot of Filipinos were DJing in the Bay Area, and some Asian kids were for sure. And that's like the thing that I gravitated towards, you know, which was like, for me was like very influential because I listened to a lot of music, and like, that was like the thing that I felt like, I was like, oh shit, like, I want to do that. You know,
was there anybody, even now, was there any, is there anybody that, when you're looking at it, it's like, oh, that there's a model of a kind of success, or they've achieved something that looked like you, and you're like, oh, because I honestly, almost everybody we invite in the show, like there wasn't that person, like Asian or Asian looking or whatever. Then it's like,
no, I mean, I wish I had, because I was, yeah, saying like, you know, what's dope now is like, it's cool that like people have the internet and they could follow a bunch of different people, and like kids have like access to seeing lives of people that they don't knew, like, you know, like existed. For me, like, whatever, this is like I graduated high school in like year 2000, so like for me I was like, this was no internet popping, like there's like chat rooms, and I didn't go like on the internet for like looking at people, you know, like that didn't exist. And like the only people that could tell me about jobs were like, you know, in my group of people were like career counselors at my school, which weren't doing anything. And when I look at like all the people that are older than me, Asian people, either like my sister's friends that were like into like gang shit, selling drugs, or like whatever, like doing stupid shit like that, you know, like there was that, which I was already never like really doing anything with. there was like DJ stuff, but I was like, I was never that good of a DJ either. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like I DJed, I was like, I could play songs, like, sure, but like, I'm not like at that Qbert level, mm-hmm. like, you know, so I can't even fathom the idea of like what that kind of career path would look like. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know, like my other like homegirl that was at the time, super cool. She was into fashion. I was like, I told my mom, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be in fashion. Like, again, have no idea what the hell that was, but she was supportive of it at least, you know? So I didn't really have that many people that I like respected, especially San Francisco, which is kind of weird. I mean, like the 90s was dope because it was like a lot of skaters, graph people, and like the music culture was good. So like, but I didn't know that many people in that industry to like actually think that I could have a career doing mm-hmm. anything related to that mm-hmm. at all. It wasn't until I got to college that I realized that I could do that.
What happened in college?
So I went to UCLA, which was great. It was like somehow amongst like, you know, doing all the stupid stuff you do in high school, I figured out like how to get like decent grades. And so I got in and then...
what did you major in?
I majored in communications. Okay. So the UC system is all like... It's all like theoretical, you know, so it's not like you really actually have like, again, a hard skill set. Mm-hmm. It's probably a common theme in my life. I don't even know the fuck I do, you know, it's just kind of like just kind of figuring out like what the hell to do. But I just like I had my really good friend, Danny Miller, who has like a design company here in New York, High Tide, which is awesome. I met him when I was a freshman in college. And like, you know, like I said, like my friend in high school got me into like being interested in DJing. I had DJ like, you know, equipment and stuff like turntables when I moved to college. He did as well. So he's from New York, and then he happened to be there, and that was like my first instance of obviously meeting somebody that, you know, I was like, I always like, I never been to New York, I never traveled when I was young, you know, like my parents, you know, my mom's divorced, you know, she never like had that much money. Mm-hmm. She raised two kids on her own. I never traveled, like, you know, so like my first time really traveling was like driving to LA when we were like, you know, trying to get to Disneyland. Like, so the first flight I ever took to LA was when I actually went there for school. So like the idea and concept in New York was foreign to me, and I didn't know anything about it. So, you know, that was like, so meeting somebody from New York was just like, whoa, that's dope. And then Danny was into all kinds of like crazy shit, you know? And I remember there that's like when we were like, Fader was coming out, you know? So like, fuck, he must have brought in like first maybe like couple issues, but he knew somebody that worked at the Fader. So then we ended up just like, you know, I remember I went to New York in like summer 2001. Fader might have been like issue 3 at the time, and then I met the people in marketing there, and they started like this whole like program around like gathering reps from different colleges to like do marketing promotions on campus. No idea, like, you know, anything like that even existed, and that was my first foray. And that's kind of how I knew that, like, oh, there's alternatives to doing stuff that existed outside of, like, your traditional jobs. And that was, like, the only thing I realized.
Did you know that, like, I know, I mean, you guys started What Matters Most, right? That was mm-hmm. Did you always have in your mind at some point that you wanted to do your own thing?
No. I think for me, too, like, you know, again, like, I had had so many different jobs prior to that. I think the only thing we created that as an outlet just to try something, to do something that mm-hmm. was independent of anything and just could all the work and stuff that was so good, it would stand up on its own. That's mm-hmm. why I never, like, cared about making money. Any type of, like, budget we got, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, like, whatever, we probably, like I said, like, we definitely spent more than that. It was just for the matter of just trying to do something interesting. Mm-hmm. So like, that's why I said, like, I think like now I'm in a space where like, yeah, it's like, cool. Like, I think I have an understanding of how to make money, and I have a, you know a different amount of people that I can feel like I can tap into projects. But I never knew that I could do that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even like, even when I was in college and stuff, like, I remember like, you know, we did all like this. Fader was like, just like a very, very special place for me. Like, you know, like in terms of like, as a company, they had that network of people that was created out of that. I still have so many like friends and like mentors and people in so many different industries from that, you know. My friend Omid, who I started like the company with, I met through there. You know, my friend Jamal, who like is a really good friend of mine, who's over at Sonos, I met through there. Damien, who's like a really good like almost like mentor of mine, I met through there, who was like, you know, these are people I've known for like now over 15 years, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, other professionals that, like, you know, worked at whatever, like LRG or like wherever the fuck, like, you know, they're all over the place. And it's just like, it's so rare that I think like something like that even existed and still transcended amongst the time that I was there. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't even think about anything that's even like that, you know, that exists now. So, which was, I think, for me, I'm just very fortunate that I happened to have that experience of just like being with people, mm-hmm. like, you know, that were like, had some share of like mind, you know, that I feel like was just cool. Like everyone there, like just literally had the same like passion, felt passionate about music, fashion, culture, art, whatever the hell you want to call it, all contributed to this magazine in all in which way, literally with just the intent of just trying to make it good,
yeah,
you know, and there happened to be some very amazing, talented people there, writers and people that like, which is so awesome, yeah. Like, you know, and I don't think, like, I mean, now publications, it's so hard, but it's also so hard to sustain something like that, you know.
So why did, why, you know, whether from Fader to Nike, I mean, you got yourself, you know, again, like, we only met at Nike, but you got yourself, I feel like, in a position that was pretty incredible, and you were working on some amazing stuff, and I can imagine a lot of people there were pretty amazing, and you got a chance to work with people outside of Nike that were interesting to you. So why leave? Like, why at this, like, what happened, what in, what's going on now where you're like, all right, now's a good time to jump out and try my own thing?
I think I just have like a very small window of time that I feel like maybe really driven to do something, you know? And I think like, it's just, I don't know. I think I realized like after like talking to so many different people that like, you know, and I think someone was telling me like, you know, independence or ownership is like the number one thing that I think, you know, that you don't realize is like so much, such a big part of like freedom in general, financial freedom, you know, time and like personal freedom. Like it's just being able to have some sort of level of ownership and independence, and that stuff is like, you know, feels like the right opportunities are kind of just presenting themselves for me to try that. Now, whether I fail or not, I think that's the other thing. I think I realize I've come to maybe the, I don't know, like I would say like understanding that it's okay to just try and do something and it doesn't work out, it's fine. It doesn't really, I don't really care, you know. If I wanted to get like, you know, if I need like a full-time job, it's possible. If I want to spend more time with my family, like I think, you know, there's a lot of like pros and cons that I have to like sacrifice to do that. And like, you know, it's like, you know, financial freedom. It's like you never really, really be able to like do and make as much money as you can on your own. You're never going to be able to have like personal time and freedom, have the ability to spend, if it's like, you know, a really nice day with like your family or like your son or your daughter, generally speaking, unless you probably have your own like thing. If you want to like travel or be somewhere else, you need to be for like a couple of period, like extended period of time. You don't really have that unless like you have your own thing. But I see so many, and I'm inspired by so many people that I know that have small businesses, you know, like yourself, like, you know, like I see like my friend Lenny, who's like doing Mold Magazine and all this stuff. It's like so cool. Like
here tomorrow.
Who's here tomorrow. You know, it's so cool because it's like, you know, you don't also need to make a lot of money to like feel like successful or like have, be like very, very happy. But what that allows you to do and like being able to work on your own things with people that you like and being able to have the time and freedom and energy to do things is awesome. You know, what I like is just like my days are so all over the place. May get like very, very stressful for me, like in like 2 months. But what's nice is it's like, yeah, like if someone like wants to have a conversation about like exploring an opportunity and I allow myself to like have the time and freedom to like talk to this person, this person, this person, like make that happen. Awesome. You know, and it's like, that's cool. Like, you know, and I think, like I said, like I have a small window of time where I feel like driven to like want to work really, really hard. I'm sure in like 10 years, I don't want to do that. You know, I want to be chilling, like, you know, but if I want to be chilling and I want to like have my own thing, I want to own a bar, whatever it is, like, well, I'm never going to get there unless I try and do something. So that's like,
is that part of the plan too?
What's that?
To own a bar in the future? Is that?
That's always been my ideal. Yeah. I don't know. Again, nothing about the bar industry. You see a common theme with like my like history of jobs. Like I literally know nothing about anything. So like, you know, for me, it's just like, yeah, like it'd be rad to like own a small bar, do the shit that I always want to do, which is like basically drink with my friends, play dominoes, listen to music, and that's the kind of shit I want to do. And that's like ideally like what I would like to do someplace warm, you know? So if I want to do that, that definitely is not a job that would hire me to do that, again, with no experience. So like I have plenty
of experience. Your bar's gonna be so good when you open it.
Yeah, right. I have plenty of experience drinking and listening to music and playing dominoes. Yeah. And like not making money. So like another common theme.
All the skills.
Exactly. But like, you know, I feel like again, if I have the opportunity, no one's gonna give me that opportunity, so let me try. Yep. Like, and that's always been like also a thing too. I've been very fortunate. A lot of people give me opportunities to do things I've known nothing about. Right. And like, you know, and like have the chance to like show, you know, give me a project or give me experience, or give me a job doing some shit that I don't know what to do. And then like sometimes I've created those, you know, basically opportunities. And I think now what I'm realizing more and more is like, yeah, because no one comes to me with like a real brief of like, give me marketing. Like, no, what the fuck does that mean? Like, you know, like, give me a marketing plan. I'm just like, that's fucking, that doesn't even mean anything. Like, you know, so like, but like, you know, for me to say, okay, you need this, 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 and you have this, this, and this. Well, if I can get you that and some of this and allow me to help you, then that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like, I'll do that, you know? And like that stuff to me is like, it's fun because it's like challenging in a way that I don't think I've ever had to be challenged. And it's also like, cool because like I can get to pick and choose the people I want to work with, like mm-hmm. that's cool, you know. May fail, who cares? I mean, like whatever. Like I want to get a job, get a shitty job somewhere, like whatever, it's fine. I've done like plenty of those things, you know.
I mean, what's crazy is like that's been a running theme actually, the in terms of like as big as a risk as people take, like you can imagine like the guests we have, like people are taking some gnarly risks. Like the attitude has always weirdly been, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
And like some shit can happen for sure.
Trust.
Like,
weirdly,
it's like, if it happens, I'll survive. I'll be fine. We'll try something else. But it's always like, all right, I'm prepared for this not to work and not worried about it. Like, don't worry. Don't stress about it not working.
The only thing I feel confident about now is that I've spent so much of other people's money on like things that I feel like smart enough and confident enough that I have somewhat of like a good understanding of what would work and what wouldn't, you know, and a pretty good understanding of who to work with if I have that, you know? So like that I know, like, you know, this because I've done enough, like, you know, at least I've been able to do that in my, and in a lot of weird industries, like I said, like publishing, which is like failing. TV and film, which to an extent is interesting or growing. Product
and
footwear.
Did you work in publishing as well?
Well, like Fader stuff, you know, like with all stuff, which is like, again, like the business has shifted so much. Yeah. Unfortunately, they're not selling as many magazines, but it's so still like opportunity, you know? So I know that. And like, I figure like I can always put two and two together. And then most of the time, I think at least I have a skill set of talking to older people that have a lot of money that I can explain things in a way that they will may believe me.
Solid.
So like that I have that skill set. Seems to be like a,
that's,
you know,
kind of
something.
Everything
good skill
now.
Set.
Yeah.
So related to that, and kind of as like a last question that we've been asking people, how did you make your first dollar with whatever your own business was at some point?
Business? Oof.
Or like your own thing, whatever it was. It doesn't have to be like an official business, but just your own. How did you create that first dollar not working for someone else?
I mean, I was doing all kinds, like I said, like stupid things when I was like small. So like the concept of money was always very, very like important to me growing up when I didn't really have a lot of money. Like our family didn't have a lot of money. So like for me, it was always trying to figure out like how to get something better with what you had. So like when I was like small and in elementary school and there was a candy store across the street that I could get like five things for 5 cents and ask somebody to give me 10 cents. Or then it became like pogs and that was like a big thing. How can I play people for enough pogs to take their pogs and give it to somebody else? Then it was like cards, trading cards, basketball cards, baseball cards. How can I keep trading people five terrible things for something better?
That's that
and
salesmanship.
Upgrade? It's like that hustle, you know?
Hustler.
Then it was just like, oh yeah. Then it was like, oh, then whatever, gambling. Then it was like, oh, like, how can I play somebody enough blackjack?
How can I lose as much money as possible?
Yeah, exactly. But it was always that, you know, and I always like always trying to figure that out. And like I felt like, you know, like I had a pretty good instinct to like do that, you know, which maybe now it's like the ultimate gamble is trying to figure out how to do that on your own, you know, which is cool.
Also, now people are hiring you to do that for them. Like, how can I give you money and make me more money?
Yeah. Through the market. Well, yeah, I'm trying. Yeah. What I realized, though, essentially out of all these conversations with so many different people, is that there's a lot of people with money that are trying to figure out how to spend it, you know, for better or for worse. You know, obviously, you take money, it comes with a consequence of, like, less freedoms, restrictions or whatever, but like I realize that there's enough people out there that, you know, are actually looking to do that, you know, and I think at the end of the day, what it really comes down to too is just understand that people want to work with people they like, so that myself included. So if I'm able to like just do projects with people that I like, then cool, like, you know, like that's the best, the end of the, that's the best situation. I'd rather do that, make less money, than like work with like a bunch of people I don't like for more money.
For sure.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, man, I hope we get to work together.
I hope so.
In your head. Yeah. And good luck. Thank you so much for hanging out. Actually, for most of the day, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was chill. Yeah. We're just playing music.
Yeah, it was good.
Just doing email. Nothing
to share that list, though.
Oh, yeah.
We posted it. I'll see if we can figure out a way to share the playlist. It's really, really good.
Cool. Tried.
Cool. Thanks, Paul.
Okay, cool. Yeah, thanks, guys.